you know, we've got this Puritan work ethic in our country, and everybody's got to work really hard. And you got to, and I mentioned this before, right? We work, and then we get to enjoy life when we retire. And I think that's BS, man. This is what life is about living. It's not about working until we're exhausted and not getting to enjoy our time with our kids. Like, you know, sending my daughter to, you know, to school all day where I don't get to spend time with her. Why would I do that? I want to spend time with her. Let me be with her. Let me take her to hang out with other kids and to learn and to do things like that. But I need to have resources and time in order to do that. I need to have a business that works around that. And if I'm constantly hustling, trying to make things happen, then I can't have that. And so what I learned with my GPS brain and, you know, the way that I see things is that there are really, really efficient ways that we can be in our businesses. But we just can't see it because the human in us wants to make things difficult, and the human in us is afraid and wants and like can only see certain limited ways of doing things.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Amy, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
It is really cool to have you here. I actually came across your work by way of a number of mutual friends who all have been former guests on the Unmistakable Creative and had nothing but amazing things to say about you. So before we get into your work, I would like to start by asking you, where in the world did you grow up and what impact did where you're from end up having on your life and your career?
Oh my gosh, that's such a great question. So it's funny because I'm kind of in this full circle moment right now. I grew up in New York, in the burbs, right outside the city, 20 minutes outside of Manhattan. And people who live in Manhattan or in the boroughs always say, "Oh, you're from upstate." And I say, "No, I'm from Westchester," which is not upstate because it's 20 minutes to the city, closer, faster than even coming from Brooklyn. So so I had this awesome, amazing, beautiful, wonderful place where I grew up on the water, a really affluent town, and then I left in my 20s, and I was gone for almost 20 years, and now I'm back and getting ready to actually move upstate. But what was amazing about growing up here is New York is so diverse and is so, you know, the energy here is different than anywhere else in the world. And I feel like, I say all the time actually that I'm so glad that I got to grow up here, that I got to learn to drive here, that I got to experience this kind of life where people are, you know, there's all this diversity. There's people who are really opinionated. There's a lot of energy moving. It's really vibrant and energized. And then I got to leave and experience other things. And so, you know, I lived in Denver for 15 years where it's a lot slower paced. And then I moved to California where it's an even slower pace there in the Central Coast to a small town. And so it's awesome because I got to have all these experiences growing up, you know, going to the Statue of Liberty and the Museum of Natural History and all these amazing places as a kid and having those experiences, Broadway, you know, all of that. And then got to leave and experience something different and see just how fortunate and lucky I was to grow up here.
What impact did growing up in an affluent suburb of New York end up having on your overall view on careers and wealth and money?
Oh my gosh, such a great question. So, so I grew up in an affluent area and was not affluent myself. My parents divorced when I was young, and my mom for, you know, almost my entire, really, like from the time my parents split up when I was 8 until I moved to Denver, she was just doing everything she could possibly do to keep us in our house, because she wanted us to be able to stay in the same schools and stay in the house that we grew up in. And so we never experienced that affluence, and our friends did. And, you know, I can remember, you know, friends on Christmas, like calling me up and saying, "Oh, I got this and I got this and I got this and I got this," and listing all the things in a TV and a, you know, stereo and all this stuff. And I'm like, "Oh my God, that's amazing. And I got a turtleneck sweater that I really needed. That's fantastic." So, you know, so it definitely, created the opportunity for me to, especially as it relates to career, like the like in school, everybody just said, what you do is you go to school, you graduate, and then you go to college. And that's just what you do. And so I kind of fell in lockstep with that idea, which I think, you know, many, many kids do, many, you know, kind of normal, quote unquote, normal human beings do. And so, I went to college after high school and I hated it. And I wasn't, I don't think I was ready to leave home. I wasn't ready to pick a career at 18. Cause what do you know when you're 18? I wasn't ready for any of that. And I left. And so I was in college for, a semester and a half. And then I got super depressed and had to come home. And it just changed everything for me at that point, because I came home and had to figure out what I wanted to do. And that, I think, was really the first step in my journey of self-discovery and self-development, to decide, okay, well, who am I? What is important to me? What are the things that I want to do? And I went on a journey that I thought of, like, a really was a journey of fulfillment in my life, but I thought was going to be found through, through a job, and just trying lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of different things. And so if you look at, I say all the time that if you look at my resume, it looks really haphazard and random, because I worked in retail and I worked in fine dining and I sold cars and I worked for nonprofits and I worked in banking and I was a project manager and a strategist and corporate and did all these different things. And none of it really makes sense in this linear fashion, because I kind of jumped here and jumped there and jumped here and jumped there. But all the while I was really just following my gut and following my intuition and just trying to figure things out all along the way. And what's amazing is that in the end, coming from this place where I, you know, I live in a town that is wonderful, but also doesn't fit me, and was lockstep with the way of being that our society says to be, and did the things that they say to do, and then was like, no, I can't. Found my way into all these different skill sets that prepared me perfectly for what it is that I do now. So it's really interesting looking backwards. Like, you know, Steve Jobs and our mutual friend Chris Winfield always reminds me of this Steve Jobs quote, which is that you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking back. And so it never made sense then. I was like, oh, I'll just try this thing. I'll just try this other thing, and let me do this thing. And now it all comes together and makes sense for where I am in this moment in time.
Yeah. What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
I had no idea. I really didn't. I don't remember ever having any strong desire. And I always thought that that was weird too. Like, why don't I know? Why don't I want to be a doctor or a fireman or a ballerina or a, you know, anything like that. And in high school, I started to think a little bit more about it and decided that I should be a lawyer because I was really good at arguing. And then I went to college and like tried to take a poli sci class or two and was like, this is the worst thing ever. No, thank you. And decided that wasn't for me. And thank goodness. Cause, you know, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine trying to go through all that to become an attorney or anything. But that was like the only idea that I ever had as a young person. And that didn't even come to me until my junior year in high school.
You mentioned this notion of lockstep of, you know, finish high school, go to college, get a job. Why do you think that social program is so deeply embedded in our culture? And as somebody who stepped away from it, how do you break that?
Oh, such a good question. I know you, I think you just recently talked to my friend Kelly Sheets, and I always think about, she always talks about being curious. And I think that we as a society have an aversion to curiosity. And I think that for me, you know, mostly I just was like, I can't, this is the worst. I hate this feeling. I don't like where I am. I can't take it anymore. I can't go to class. I'm staying in bed all day. So I just kind of had to leave and try something different. But I think that we're afraid to be curious because we're afraid, we just don't know what's on the other side of it. And so we have these inherent, you know, fears within us. We've got our amygdala, this awesome part of our brain that's here to keep us safe from the saber-toothed tiger around the corner. But our genetics just hasn't quite caught up with the fact that we've also got this part of us, this intuitive gut knowing that works really, really effectively when we're allowed, when we allow ourselves to listen to it. And so the curiosity or the aversion to curiosity is because we've got this fear that there's something on the other side of making a decision that's not like the norm, that's going to put us on the outside of what, you know, what's everybody going to think of me, or what might happen next, or what will my parents say if I say I don't want to go to school, what will, you know, the other kids in school think. Like, I remember there was a girl who I went to high school with who was taking the year off. And I didn't, and I heard about it probably like a week before graduation. And at that point I was already committed to college and, you know, had sent in my whatever tuition and all that stuff. And I had never heard of that. Like, the idea of taking a year off from college had never occurred to me. She was going to take the year off and travel and explore and do all these things and be, cause she was curious. And so this idea, like, we just have this genetic makeup that wants to keep us safe from the things that we don't understand and the things that we don't know, and anything other than what's presented in front of us as the norm, I think can be really scary for some people. And so it requires a lot of courage and curiosity to be able to say, I'm going to try something different. I'm just going to try something different.
Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by Shaker and Spoon. So a couple of nights ago, me and our content strategist, King Shook, decided to get together and mix some drinks at home. He picked up a bottle of rye and I brought over the box that I got in the mail from Shaker and Spoon. Now, if you've ever ordered a craft cocktail at a bar, you've probably noticed that it seems like a million different ingredients go into it and it might be impossible to replicate at home. Not only that, you'd probably have to spend a small fortune for the ingredients that you might only use once or twice. Well, with Shaker and Spoon, that doesn't have to be the case. In our first box, we had three different recipe cards for different drinks like a mule and a whiskey sour, a bunch of different ingredients like syrups, bitters, mixers, garnishes, and a bunch of other stuff, along with an instruction guide on how to mix these drinks. It's a bit like Blue Apron for cocktails. So if you're having a party and you want to impress your guests with some craft cocktails, or you just want to up your bartending skills, visit shakerandspoon.com/creative and get $20 off your first order. Again, that's shakerandspoon.com/creative.
When you quit, what was this thing that you were most afraid of?
When I quit school?
When you quit college, yeah. What was the thing that scared you the most? And what was the reaction from your parents?
Yeah, it was really, the thing that scared me the most was what are my parents going to think? It was mostly, what is my dad going to think? Because my dad was, you know, was the one that was the most excited about me going and, you know, took me on the college visits and, you know, was paying for it and everything. And so I really was so scared. I didn't know what was going to happen. And, you know, speaking of the fear, for most of us, I think every single one of us probably, there's some like bottom most fear that we have, that if you just chase that thing down the rabbit hole all the way down, there's like one thing down there that's the main thing that we're afraid of. And for me, it's always that everybody's going to hate me, I'm going to end up alone, and I'm going to die alone. And so that was the underlying fear, was, oh my gosh, my dad's going to hate me, I'm going to end up alone, and I'm going to die. And I couldn't articulate that then, but that was really what I was experiencing, was my dad is going to hate me, I'm going to end up alone, I'm going to die. He's never going to love me again. Holy wow, what am I going to do now? And so in the end, my mom was really supportive, because she, you know, understood what that was like and had experienced it herself and had been depressed as well. And when she was in school, and so she really got it and was like, whatever you need to do, you do. And my dad eventually understood as well, because he knew that I was really, you know, just so unhappy there. And he was definitely disappointed. And that, I think, was part of the other fear, was, oh my God, my dad's going to be disappointed in me. And so I think he was, but, you know, ultimately he eventually got over it, which is great. He still loves me now, 20 years later, which is also great.
What did they do for work?
My dad has also had kind of a haphazard career. He went to school and got a degree in biology and wanted to be a veterinarian. And then when he graduated from college, he ended up going into paper sales. So selling, like the middleman, selling paper to people who create catalogs and things like that. And then he did that forever and was in sales for 20, 25 years, and then decided that he just needed to follow his heart again and went back to his love of science and became an EMT. And then a paramedic. He was a volunteer fireman for, you know, my whole life basically, and went back and became an EMT and a paramedic. And then, and then became he was doing he had a director position in a hospital system for a while, and now he's teaching in a school in Queens, teaching high school kids in a special program that gives them the skills that they need to become, I think, EMTs or paramedics themselves, something like that. It's like part of their high school curriculum, and so he's teaching them all that, which is a really nice. It's a little exhausting for him at 60, almost 68, almost 69. Is that right? Yeah. Anyway, but it's cool. And then my mom has had lots of different things for her careers as well. She, for a long time, she's always been really, an early adopter for technology. And so we had an Apple IIe computer in our house, first people in the neighborhood to have a computer, home computer. And so she's always been into that stuff. So she was a PowerPoint expert for a long time and, created, really cool, I don't know, graphics and PDFs and things like that for a long time. And then she took a left turn and decided to become certified as a hypnotherapist. And so she did that for a while. And now she's actually helping me in my business, which is really fun.
Did having parents who had such a wide variety of careers and different things that they did as part of their career, do you think that sort of set the tone for you to be able to do it, or made it easier for you to be able to do it?
I don't know, because when I made the choice to do it, they were, my mom was pretty solid with her work then. She'd only had a couple different things that she was doing back then. But my dad was still in sales at the time that I was kind of bouncing around. He didn't really make the choice to follow his passion until he was, I don't know, in his 50s probably. So that put me in my 20s. And maybe because they were so solid and I looked at that and was like, are they really happy doing this stuff? I don't know. Maybe that was what kind of got me going in a different direction. I'm not really sure. They were both pretty solid doing what they were doing. And I don't know that it necessarily impacted that one way or another. I think it's just me deciding that I mentioned this before, that I was really looking for fulfillment in my life. And I kept thinking that a job was going to be the way to get it. Because again, that's kind of the bill of goods that we're sold, is that especially as Americans, we do the work, we get the American dream, we retire at 65 and we can finally enjoy our lives. We work. And so I kept thinking, well, I better have a job that I really enjoy. So I just kept trying things until I found something. And I really wanted to have a career where I could be developed, where somebody would see the potential in me. I'm somebody who sees potential everywhere. And that's just inherent in who I am. It's one of my superpowers. And I see potential in people and in their ideas. And I really wanted somebody to see that in me. And so I was hoping that I was going to find a job where that would happen. I finally did. The last job that I had before I left to start my business, I finally found that. But it took years, decades to have that experience.
So you mentioned before we hit record here officially that you're a parent. And having been somebody who dropped out of school, how does that impact your thoughts on how you plan to educate your daughter? And also, what advice would you give her in terms of careers, given your own trajectory?
Oh, that's such a great question. So with my daughter, I am really, really, really committed to understanding who she is and what she's really excited about in life, and letting her mostly lead the way there. I want to help guide her in her decision making. She's only 2.5 right now, but I'm really committed to figuring out what it is that she's really passionate about and helping her figure that out for herself without saying, this is the way that you have to do it because everybody else does it. I really want her to have an experience in life where she can trust herself enough to know that she can make the choices that feel good to her. And so if she wants to go to college, awesome. But I want her to decide that because that's what she wants and not because everybody else is doing it or because it's what somebody else is telling her she should do or because she, saw it on TV or because society says. I want her to really decide that this is what she wants to do because it's what makes her feel like her, like the most her that she could possibly be. So I don't really care. I don't have any commitment one way or the other. All I want is for her to experience fulfillment in her life and to be happy. And if that means that she goes to school, great. And if it doesn't, I don't know if I can curse on your podcast, but I don't effing care. I just don't. It doesn't matter. I'm not committed one way or the other. I'm only committed to her having a journey in her life that that is the highest expression of who she is and who she wants to be.
You dropped out. So how would you change education in a way that would have not compelled you to drop out?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think school when I was there was different than it is now. So there's lots of things that I would change about now. Like I don't intend to, I'm doing my best to try to figure out a way to educate my daughter outside of the traditional, school system because to me, it doesn't work. And so what's wrong now that I see, and I think there were elements of this then is that we don't teach our kids to think critically or to think for themselves or to trust themselves. And that is hugely, hugely detrimental because I know for me, I've spent the last, I mean, really 20 plus years trying to figure out how to trust myself. And that's something that we're born with. We're born with this self-trust. We're born knowing how amazing and epic and awesome we are. And we lose that. We cover it up through our life experiences. And so, you know, the most important job that I have right now that I do every single moment of every day is helping my daughter understand that she can trust herself. And so I'm really careful with the language that I use around her. I say no sometimes, but most of the time I'm trying to encourage her to understand why something is a no or why we, you know, are going to do things differently or, you know, whatever. I try to explain things as often as I can so that she can critically think and understand what, you know, what works and what doesn't for her, how she can trust herself and not have to feel scared. Like I know I grew up feeling immensely worried about what other people were going to think or what other people were going to say. And I don't ever want her to have that experience. And I think that so much of that comes from this feeling like we have to just show up. They tell us what to do. We do the things and then we get a gold star. And that's how we define that we're good enough, that we're okay enough. But what if that's not? What if we get to define that for ourselves? Yeah. And that's what I really want for her.
You know, it's interesting because I have struggled with that idea of being worried what other people would think probably for the entirety of my life. It's something that I still think about to this day. And I think it's probably one of the most toxic social programs that we receive. But on the flip side of that, I think you have to balance that with the fact that we have to exist as social human beings and deal with other people and trying to find the balance between those two things. How do you find that?
Well, I don't have it figured out yet, but I can tell you that I totally agree. And so I think that there's, there are extremes to everything, right? You could be somebody who says, you know, F you to everybody. I don't care. I just don't care. And I'm going to do whatever I want. And then you become, you know, the person who lives in a cave and is perfectly happy living in a cave by themselves. But, you know, to me, one of my, maybe my core value is connection. And so it's really, really important for me to feel connected. But I think that to others, right? I want to feel connected to other people. I want to feel connected to you in this conversation. I want to feel like your audience is connecting with me. That's really, really important to me. Relationships are really important to me. But at the same time, I think we have to start with ourselves in order to be able to create the most effective connections externally. Like it has to come from our internal first. And so, you know, for me, that looks like feeling like I am okay everywhere all the time, no matter what, no matter how ridiculous, dramatic, uncomfortable, weird the situation with another person or people might be, I just have to know that I'm always okay. You know, and I'm going through some stuff in my life right now that could easily be, you know, from the external, could easily be judged as holy wow, your whole world is colliding and collapsing, and oh my gosh, how are you doing it? But I know that I'm always okay, and so it doesn't matter what else is happening. I'm always okay, always, 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 even by every standard that normal humans would say, wow, you're totally screwed. I'm actually always okay. And so when I can, oh, and my daughter might be running in right now. And so when I can know that, so when I'm always okay, then it really doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. And at the same time, I can still connect with you and also know that the more okay that I am with me, the more room it gives you to feel okay with you.
Hey, it's Srini. First off, I just want to say thank you for believing in the message of Unmistakable Creative. The last year has been one of the most rewarding that I've ever had. And as some of you might know, I have a new book coming out in August, and I'm looking for more stages to speak on in my area of expertise, which is in designing products and services that stand out in a sea of noise, and in how to be more prolific, productive, and creative in your day-to-day life. So, whether you lead a student group on a university campus, or are a member of a professional association, or you work at a nonprofit or a company, and you think my message would be a fit for one of your events, I'd love to hear from you. If you want to learn more, visit unmistakablecreative.com/speaking. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/speaking.
That sense of being always okay, is that something that you have developed over the course of your life? And if so, how, and how do other people do?
Yes, it's definitely something that's been developed over time, for sure. I can remember. So when I left college, I came home and was severely depressed, trying to figure my life out, didn't know where I belonged, what I was doing, I'd failed, I was a disappointment, all of those things. And so I felt like I was at the bottom of, I had hit rock bottom, really, to use a cliched term. But and from there, I just became curious, and I started seeking. And so it started really with therapy. I just didn't know, like, I was 18, 19, and was like, I guess I need to go to see a therapist. So let me go do that. So I started there. And then from there, it's just been a journey, and it's always a journey. It's just an ongoing journey. It just continues and continues and continues every day. Reading books and, meeting people and connecting and having experiences. I think that for me, the most impactful tool has been awareness and creating awareness of myself and of, what, like, watching my mind and what my mind does. And it helps so much to spend time with the right people who are also on a journey like this. So I heard that Jim Rohn quote right around the time when I started my business, so just about 5 years ago, which is, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And it hit me right in the center of my being, because I had been thinking to myself, wow, I'm not getting traction with my business yet. And I don't really understand why. And then I heard that quote, and I started to look around at who I was spending the majority of my time with. And my friends were wonderful people, but nobody was a business owner. Nobody was as driven or as passionate about making change in the world as I was. I could tell it was showing up in my results, in my life, and in my business. And so spending time with the right kind of people who are moving in the same direction that I want to go in, and who are who also believe that they're on a constant journey of self-discovery, has been really important. But having that, developing that self-awareness to watch my mind at all times has been, I think, the other key element, because it gives me the opportunity to see what's happened in real time and to be able to say, it gives my mind the opportunity to, it gives me the opportunity to see what my mind is doing and to say, wow, that's just my mind. I'm actually okay. I'm actually just fine. I'm here. This is me present. There's nothing in my immediate danger, like in my immediate experience, that's dangerous. I'm actually just fine, and then it helps me quiet my mind. And so I think those two things, really, like who you hang out with and being able to have that presence of awareness, have been the main drivers. And those are the things that I'm constantly focused on day to day, is amplifying and continuing to grow in those two areas.
Wow. Earlier in our conversation, you mentioned that fulfillment was something you thought that you would get from a job. And I'm wondering, if you didn't get it from a job or from building the business that you have, where did you ultimately find it?
So, yeah, great. You have such great questions. So I thought that I'd found it in my last career before I started my business. I was working for a Fortune 25 financial company, and I had been given the opportunity to grow. People saw my potential, helped me grow in my career. I had my last job there was kind of a coveted position. I was working in strategy and project management, and was able to work from home and, you know, was making great money and had an amazing boss and a great team, and it was easy and it was fun, but it was, there was still something missing, and people would look at me and say, "You are crazy." I mean, even my, my husband was, you know, was like, "You're out of your mind. Why would you ever leave this job? You know, like, that's just crazy. You love it. It's great." But it wasn't enough. And so there was this feeling of, it's just not enough. I've done all these things and it's just not enough. I needed to feel that deep sense of fulfillment. And so I started my business and I left my job ultimately. And I think that really the two things that have created three things that have created the most fulfillment for me, where I've actually been able to experience it and feel like I've satiated that desire, are becoming a mother. Again, it might seem like a cliched thing to say, but it really has completely changed my whole way of being and the intentionality that I bring to everything in my life. And then running my business, like really being able to just be me and embrace my values and do the things that I really enjoy doing, and knowing that that's making an impact in the world, that I'm creating exponential impact by helping my clients connect to the things that they need to grow and to serve more. That is deeply, deeply fulfilling. So service and actually doing my work, but then connection in general, like connecting to people like you, to my clients, to all the various, I've got this amazing network and I love connecting and connecting inward, as well. So those three things for sure.
How do other people figure out what their own path to fulfillment is?
I think it's individual for everybody. And so I think that if anything for my life were going to inspire, inspire somebody else, then I think the steps to follow, if there are any, are really just to be deeply curious and to be willing to be uncomfortable. I tell my clients all the time to just go ahead and vomit, do the things that make you want to puke, because all the growth and all the best things are on the other side of the deep, deep discomfort that we feel in doing them. Yeah. And that we don't get those big results unless we just hold our hair back and go ahead and vomit and do the stuff that makes us really uncomfortable. So I think having that courage and the curiosity to begin with, is really the way, because we just, otherwise we're just going through the motions, and the other thing too is that I think that there are people who experience fulfillment without that, certainly, but in my experience, that the deep, true, real fulfillment in life comes from our willingness to like becoming a mother. That's effing uncomfortable, man. That was 6 hours of extreme discomfort, really extreme discomfort. And it was so worth it. Oh my gosh, the most amazing, life-changing, best thing ever was on the other side of that, ever. And it was only 6 hours. Like, that's no big deal. I get a whole lifetime of amazing out of that 6 hours of discomfort. It's nothing. And that's really what all of these experiences are like. Every time I'm watching my mind and I notice that I'm, oh, this feels uncomfortable. Oh gosh, I don't really want to reach out to that person and, you know, like make that connection because I really do want it. And I know that there's really great things on the other side of it, but it makes me uncomfortable. And I feel like they're going to judge me, or I don't know what's going to happen. Or maybe I am going to actually get the result that I really want. And then what does that mean? And what might happen then? And oh my gosh. And I watch my mind and then I go, okay, this is just my mind and I can do it and I'm going to be okay. And oh, by the way, the growth that I really want is on the other side of it. I want that fulfillment. So let me just go and do the thing. And then it's fine. And then I go, and then I'm always going, you know, think to myself, what the hell was I waiting for? It was so stupid. It was so silly.
Hey, it's Srini. I wanted to tell you about our new online course called Distraction Mastery. In this course, you'll learn exactly how to eliminate time-robbing distractions, master your attention, and get in the zone on command.
In under 10 minutes a day, you'll learn a proven, powerful framework for killing distractions and developing unshakable focus based on proven research and experience. These are the exact strategies that I've personally used to write 2 books and hundreds of articles. So to learn more, visit courses.unmistakablecreative.com. Again, that's courses.unmistakablecreative.com.
Well, let's do this. Let's shift gears. I want to actually talk about your work, which we haven't really gotten to. We've kind of danced around the edges of it. You know, I had a chance to meet you in person, and it was funny because I walked away from it thinking, I know you personally now, but I don't know a lot about you in a professional context. But I did spend some time doing some research on you, and a couple of questions come up. You know, you've had all these meandering careers. You mentioned the idea of, you know, only being able to connect the dots looking back, and I'm wondering if you have found a through line from all of these various work experiences. And then I want to get into this notion of hustle free, which I know is a big part of your message. And, you know, I think the thing that stood out to me on either your about page or one of your pages was hustle free and $64,000 in a week. I thought, okay, wait a minute. How'd those two things happen in the same time? So like three questions in one.
Okay. Tell me, what was the first part again? I missed the first part.
You know, when you look back at all these various careers, what do you think has been the through line?
So I think that, I don't know that there's necessarily a through line so much as it was skill sets all coming together to build the trifecta of awesome that creates what I'm able to do now. If there were a through line, it's just that I trusted my intuition to say, all right, cool, I'll try this thing. No idea why I'm going to try it, but I'm going to try it. And at the time, I don't think I could have, like, if somebody had told me then that I was trusting my gut, I would have. And that was actually a skill worth having or a quality worth patting myself on the back for, I would have been like, whatever, I just need a job, man. But I really did. I was listening to myself, to my inner guidance. And so that would have been the through line. But then there were all these skills that I got. So like working in fine dining, I learned about amazing customer service and how to give, you know, an amazing client experience. When I sold cars, I learned how to be really deeply curious and to qualify people and to understand what they need and how to match them with, you know, what they need and want with what we have and available and finding them the right resources. Working in nonprofits, I've learned a ton about how to bootstrap and do things, you know, without much direction. And then working in strategy and project management, I finally was able to put my, I say that I have a GPS brain. I call it a GPS brain. When somebody tells me something that they want to create or something that they're trying to do, my brain kicks into gear and I see a map form of all the ways that are like shortest, most effective and fun ways to get to that end result that they want to create. And so all those things put together, help me, evolve in my business in the various ways that I now run my business. And so when I started my business, I thought that I was just going to be a life coach. I had heard about that and thought, oh, I give great advice. I'm really good at giving advice. I should just do that. And I couldn't get the business off the ground. For a year, I was hustling and trying and trying and trying and couldn't figure it out. And I could not make any money. I made, I think, $60 in revenue my first year, and not profit, revenue. But I learned a ton because I was like taking courses and working with a high level coach and doing all these things. And I learned a ton about marketing and online business and lead generation and all that stuff. But like taking my skill set of strategy, you know, I would talk to other entrepreneur friends and I'd sit with them for 15 minutes and help them map out an entire strategy to create something, an offering or whatever. I remember sitting in a hotel room with some friends once and my friend was like really stuck on how to, you know, plan out this retreat that she wanted to put together and sell. And I was like, well, let's just talk about it. And so and in like 12 minutes, we had the whole thing planned out. I mapped it all out for her and she was like, how did you do that? And they were like, why aren't you doing that for your business? And so my business took a turn then because I didn't even realize that it was a skill set. I thought everybody's brains work this way, that everyone can see in maps. I had no idea that was something just my own. And so then I started doing business strategy, marketing strategy for entrepreneurs and you know, continued to kind of chug along, finally started to make some money and figure out the business thing. The $64,000 week. I'm trying to remember which came first, whether the idea for Hustle Free came first or the other. I can't remember. But what I realized was that I don't really think it's necessary. Like, this is another thing, you know, speaking of conforming to social norms, you know, we've got this Puritan work ethic in our country and everybody's got to work really hard and you got to, and I mentioned this before, right? We work, and then we get to enjoy life when we retire. And I think that's BS, man. This is what life is about living. It's not about working until we're exhausted and not getting to enjoy our time with our kids. Like, you know, sending my daughter to, you know, to school all day where I don't get to spend time with her. Why would I do that? I want to spend time with her. Let me be with her. Let me take her to hang out with other kids and to learn and to do things like that. But I need to have resources and time in order to do that. I need to have a business that works around that. And if I'm constantly hustling, trying to make things happen, then I can't have that. And so what I learned with my GPS brain and, you know, the way that I see things is that there are really, really efficient ways that we can be in our businesses. But we just can't see it because the human in us wants to make things difficult, and the human in us is afraid and wants and like can only see certain limited ways of doing things. And so I kept seeing these patterns in my clients too, where they'd say, you know, especially as it relates to marketing, that they'd want to create a funnel and do all this stuff so that, you know, they could ultimately get more clients. And I'm like, well, that's great, but what's the goal? What's the end result that you want? Because that's what, like, once I can see the end result, then I can create the most efficient way to get there. So what's the end result? And they'd say, I want more clients. And I'd say, great. So you want to create this funnel thing. And I know it makes sense because everybody says they have to have one and you got, and everybody's doing it and you got to build it up. But there's like 6,000 steps to build that funnel. You got to, you know, decide what the opt-in is going to be. You got to build it out. You got to create it. You got to have a place for it to live. You got to create the lead page. You got to write the copy. You got to find the images. You got to design it. You got to build it. You got to create the Facebook ad that's going to run traffic to it. And you got to write the copy for that and find the, and there's like so many, and then you got to have a nurture sequence and blah, 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 and like a million steps before you ever get to even making the offer for somebody to become your client. And so if the goal is I want more clients, there's got to be an easier way than creating this 6,000 step process and having to build it and hustle and do all that work. What if you could say, I don't know, like make a list of people that you think might make good clients and invite them on the journey? That's like two steps. And so I kept seeing that there were all these more efficient, more effective ways that were also more fun. Because here's the other thing that we do is that we try to fit ourselves into everybody else's box and blueprint and definition of what works and what we're supposed to be doing. Because we don't know, as especially if we're, you know, newer in business or if we're trying to, you know, zig and zag and like try something new and get new results in our business if we're growing. We think, okay, well, let me try something new. And so we pick up somebody else's formula, we try to do it their way, but it's not us. And that creates resistance and that creates hustle too, because now we're trying to do it somebody else's way that wasn't built for us or for our business or for the things that we even enjoy doing. And so the closer that we can get to aligning ourselves with our values and what we enjoy doing and with processes that have worked for us in the past, the easier everything gets. And that's how we remove the hustle. And I've created this amazing business. And so I had a $64,000 week because I stopped getting in my own way and I stopped thinking that I had some major problem and whatever. And I just got closer and closer and closer to me and being comfortable with me and not being afraid of inviting people on the journey and all of that stuff. And it ended in this amazing epic revenue week. And my business has been that way, mostly on, sometimes off, because I forget my human wants to make things difficult. But in the last 6-9 months, I've changed my business model again so that it's really just all about connection and helping to connect entrepreneurs to their ideal clients. And so one thing that I know about myself is I don't really like to sell myself. I just don't. It's not fun. I love like talking to people in interviews and, you know, doing this kind of thing is amazing, but I don't really want to ever, I just don't enjoy saying like, hey, it's $6,000 to join my program. Would you like to join me? No matter how valuable I think it is, it's hard. And I just don't enjoy it. What I really enjoy doing though is talking about everybody else that I know that's epic and amazing. And I know a lot of epic and amazing people who get results. They get amazing results for their clients. And so that's what I really want to do is just talk about other people and how awesome they are and connect them to the people that they can serve. So that, because I know that entrepreneurs like us, people who are mission driven and who are, you know, creating amazing things to help people, to actually help people. Like, we're the ones that are actually going to change the world here. And so the more that I can help other entrepreneurs be successful by connecting them to the amazing people that I know that actually can help them get results, help them get more clients, help them serve more in the world, that's the secret, special, amazing sauce that's going to help us actually achieve the result of changing the world. I have no idea if I answered your question, because I feel like I took a total left turn somewhere down the road and like we've gone completely off track. But that's, I think, kind of gets to what you were asking about.
Yeah, no, you definitely did. It sounds to me like you have really found what your zone of genius is as a result of being able to see the most efficient path for somebody to get to what they're trying to accomplish. And how do you help people find their own zone of genius, or find what that thing is for them?
That's a really good question too. So I don't really help other people find that. I mean, I think that they, like, the people that come to me these days, especially because, you know, now what I do so much more is I use that GPS brain to see the best connections to make for people. You know, I think that as entrepreneurs, it's really easy for us. I don't know if this is true of you, but it was definitely true of me, and has been before. It's really easy to go searching for the right solutions that we need in our businesses and the right resources, but then not know what they are. And we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording too. Like, you're talking about how you're hiring people to help you with your book launch, because, you know, that's actually something that you've learned that you need. And so I'm guessing that you probably asked around and vetted before you hired somebody.
Yeah.
Right. And so a lot of times for entrepreneurs who aren't as well connected as you or I are, that's hard to do, because we don't know where to find the people. We search on Google. We look in Facebook groups. You know, we just kind of stumble on things. If we click a shiny Facebook ad that seems really like they've got great marketing and stuff. And it's really easy to find resources that don't necessarily get the results that these entrepreneurs need and want. And because I know so many people that I've vetted who are so valuable, you know, like our friend Chris Winfield, who's amazing at getting people publicity and PR. He's like the master at that. You know, my friend Majid, who's the most epic rock star public speaking coach you've ever met. Like, there's all these people that I know who are amazing at what they do. And so I think it's really easy as entrepreneurs to get sidetracked and to not know where to how to connect to those things. And so I use my GPS brain now. Oh, and to think that we need the wrong thing at the wrong time. Like, so often, like I was saying about the funnel, like, we think we need a funnel, or we think we need to fix our website, or we think we need to do XYZ thing to get ABC result, when in reality, the most efficient way is to, you know, do this other thing instead, to like go find somebody to help get you more exposure to get the leads, or because that's going to be way more fun and exciting for you. And so if I can help, like, the people that I help, they know already what their zone of genius is. They're really clear on that, and they just want to help more people with it. And I'm here to just help them either find those people or find the resources that they need to help them find more of those people.
Mm-hmm. A few final questions for you. This is something that I've been asking a lot of people, I think, mainly because of a 40th birthday coming up. But I'm wondering, has your definition of success changed with age?
Definitely has. Because, you know, to me, life is just evolution. And so I think definitions of everything change over time. And I'm so excited to see what it'll mean 5 years from now. But it certainly has. Because I think, you know, thinking back to the conversation earlier about being, you know, a high school student who thought she had to go to college and get a job and figure that out at 18 when you don't know an effing thing about anything in life, that was what success was. And then after that, for a long time, success was finding the job that was going to give me fulfillment. And then after that, for a long time, success was finding the right relationship so that I could feel loved in my life. And right now, success is a day where I am completely present. I'm able to spend time with my daughter and enjoy her and hear her giggle and laugh, and knowing that I've had an opportunity to serve and in a way that feels really good to me. And again, tomorrow it might be something different. You know, a year from now, I'm sure it'll be something different. But the more me that I can be and the more present that I can be right now, that's what the definition of success is for me.
Wow.
Well, this has been really, really great. And I have one last question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at the Unmistakable Creative. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I think that I kind of just said it. I think that the more that so to me, it all comes down to energy. And so anytime anybody has ever made an impact on my life, it's because of the way that they've made me feel. And that could be good or bad, right? And not that there's even any judgment around it, but like either I felt, wow, I just want to lean in and get more of that. It's because of their energetic way of being. And the more comfortable that they are with themselves, the more comfortable I feel like I can be with myself. And that to me is the juice. That's when I'm like, oh, I need more of that. I just want to be around this person. I want to soak it all up. Let me just get like, oh yes, I have to have more of that. And, so I think the more comfortable with ourselves we can be, the more resonant we become with others, the more unmistakable we can be.
Awesome. Well, this has been really, really cool. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join us and share your insights and your story with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Oh, thanks, Trini. This has been awesome. Thank you so much for having me and for having August pop in and join us as well. But yeah, best way to find me is on amyburks.com, or you can search for me on Facebook and join my We Get Results community. That's an awesome place where I get to feature a new super friend every month, one of my awesome people in my network who get amazing results for entrepreneurs. And it's a really fun place with just lots and lots and lots of value happening. So they can find me at amyburks.com or on Facebook in the We Get Results community.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.